Welcome to episode 497 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. And Josh, what am I doing here? I'm on vacation.
You are on vacation, but even a vacation can't stop you from being a fanboy of Apple stuff.
Oh, man, that is so true. So the house where I'm staying has like this home theater room. And you know how I've used it so far? To watch the Apple announcements.
That doesn't surprise me at all. Did you bring an Apple TV with you?
Of course I did.
Of course you did. Of course you did. All right. Well, before we let Richard nerd out on his Apple stuff, and for those of you who aren't into the Apple stuff, like, we're only talking about the media related things. We're not going to talk about iPhones, iPads, Apple Watch, none of that crap. We're only going to talk about the stuff that makes sense for the show. We're going to do that first, like after our feedback and stuff. So you could skip ahead past that if you really don't care about Apple stuff, and then it'll be normal show stuff. But I'm warning you, if you do that, you won't get to hear Richard at all because he is on vacation. So he's only going to join us for the Apple stuff. So without further ado, let's get into a little bit of feedback. And Richard, I'll cover these. I'm going to kind of summarize both of these. First up,
okay.
Preston wrote into us after the last episode. He thought that we were a little unclear about the HD Home Run Servio. He thought that we didn't quite clearly state that the Servio is a standalone DVR. You still need HD Home Run tuners, and that's where the Scribe comes in, because the Scribe is tuners and a DVR, whereas the Servio is just the DVR, and you need separate tuners. And apparently, we didn't do a great job of making that point clear last week. So, Preston, thank you for pushing on us to get that clear. Yes, the Servio is absolutely a standalone HD Home Run DVR server with, is it 2 terabytes of storage? I didn't write that down. You probably know.
There are 1 and 2 terabyte versions, I believe, and are testing the 2 terabyte version.
Right. None of that is new. Like, we reported on that aspect of it way back at CES when we first talked to Silicon Dust about
these. I do have to admit, though, I forgot about it because I already have the server set up in the Scribe.
Right. So Preston said he was using an NVIDIA Shield TV with an external hard drive as his HD Home Run server. And when he got a Servio, he turned off the NVIDIA Shield. So he's just using the Servio now. Because cool. You can really only have one. You can't have more than one HD Home Run DVR server. You've got to pick one place to run it.
And what that also suggests is that these two devices are smart enough to know not to compete with each other. If one is already running, then it's not going to try and spin up the other one.
Right. All right, the other piece of feedback, we got a pretty long message from our friend Captain Lawn Paul. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's fine. But the first point that he brought up is the most interesting. He said, you had all that talk about TV Guide, and yet there is the TV Time app, which he talks about a lot. We've talked about a few times on the show. He says, it shows all the upcoming shows with a countdown timer. I like that. And you can set alerts and reminders. In fact, you can even add the shows to your Google Calendar if you wanted to do that for some reason. Maybe if you share your calendar events with your partner and you want to set TV date nights. TV Time does all the networks, all the streaming ecosystems, and even web series. So that's awesome. That's probably better than that TV Guide site. So
yeah, I think it is, but I don't know that it does a good job of isolating premieres, right? Like, what we were really focusing on was, here's the list of premieres. And unless you already know what you're watching, then maybe I'm just not looking in the right place, but I haven't found in the TV Time app how you can just find premiere apps. That's something that we used to be able to do in Seton's apps, where you'd be able to filter by premieres. And that was a pretty cool feature. So yeah, I totally agree with what he's saying. And I, in fact, have those notifications on. I love the fact that I get reminders that, hey, this show that you normally watch is going to be on in an hour. It's a nice kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. He had a couple of other points that we'll just hit on briefly. Once again, he had to agree with me on something. Apparently, my comment about asking you why in the world you were watching the Hobbit movies had him laughing so hard while driving the lawnmower at work that one of his friends had to stop and check on him to make sure he was okay. Why are you wasting your time with Hobbit movies? He also wanted to maybe suggest that as we already talk about the Games with Gold and the PS Plus free games every month, he wondered if we could also talk about the games that are being added to Xbox Game Pass. And I'm not sure about that one, because that's a lot of games. Like, they add games to that every couple of weeks. And I can see why that would be useful to him. But I just don't want us to get too bogged down in just covering one particular game subscription service, even though I think it's really the best one that's available right now. So we'll think about that one and we'll get back with you, Paul. And then he also mentioned that he's a huge audiobook fan and knows that you and I are getting into audiobooks a lot more, and said if we ever need recommendations, we should hit him up. So I think I'm going to, because he said he's a big sci-fi fan and I could use some more sci-fi books in my life.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. I'm glad to hear that. You know, unrelated to this, we got another message this week that I think was a mistake. I don't think it was.
I think so, too.
I don't think it was intended for us, but so many weird coincidences, because it was a question about audiobooks from libraries, and it was someone asking if she had multiple library accounts across multiple libraries that she was paying for, and they had access to different audiobook systems, then are they all using the same library? And she noticed that the library was called the DMZ Collection. Right. I'm like, well, that's not us, but nope. That might be why she wrote to us. What I ended up learning over the last actually couple of weeks, I didn't realize this, is that, you know, when we talk about how libraries have digital copies available, I figured they just subscribe to these services and they make them available to their customers and at no fee. But in fact, the way that it works is that the libraries actually license a specific number of each title. So for example, if a new Harry Potter book comes out, they might order like 50 or 100 licenses to that title, and they can only, quote, lend out, meaning allow 100 people to be viewing that on digital at the same time. And then when one of them gives it up, when one of them says, okay, I'm done, then it can be lent out again. It's just like the normal library process.
It's exactly like the normal library process. Yeah, I've been doing this a lot lately. And yeah, when a new like New York Times bestseller comes out, if you're not on it like immediately, you're waiting weeks before you get that book, just like you would the hardback at the library.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yes. That's really cool. I liked that, actually. I did not know that.
I don't know that it's cool. It annoys the crap out of me when I have to wait weeks to read a book, but it's free, which is the other weird, like the message that we got from the lady asking about audiobooks. The thing that was weird to me was paying the library. Like, what library is making you pay for this
stuff?
Well,
because if you want to be a member of a library where you don't live, then you need to pay to be a member.
Hmm. Okay. Like, I live in a suburb, which is technically in a separate county of the larger city that I'm near. I have library cards at my town's library and the bigger city next to me. And I didn't have to pay anything. Like, I didn't even have to go to the library. I went to the website and got a card. So that's weird to me.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how the different jurisdictions work. I know that I had to show my license to prove that I was a resident when I joined our county library. So,
okay. Well,
yeah.
Yeah, they got to make their money somehow. And most of it's through taxes and stuff. So if you don't live there and you're not paying the taxes, that does make sense.
Exactly. So.
All right. Well, that's probably enough listener feedback. I know you are itching to talk about this Apple news. So where do you want to start?
Yeah, there's not a ton here. And actually, all of this isn't necessarily from the Apple event that happened this week. But there are three pieces of news, basically, that touch on video, music, and gaming. And those are kind of the major areas that we like to cover here. So let's start with video. We know that Apple TV Plus has been promoted for, Josh, it feels like years. I mean, it really feels like years.
Yeah, and it really does.
Maybe it was, I don't know. But we learned more about it at the Summer Developers event, where they talked about the different types of programming that they were going to have, and that this was going to be a service that would have all originals, and they showed some trailers, and they had people come up on stage, and they made a big deal of it. And recently there have been trailers showing up on the Apple site and on YouTube, and there's been a lot of buzz. I mean, some of these shows look pretty good, but we're talking like three or four shows right now. And at launch, which is going to be in November, it's likely that they're not going to have more than half a dozen shows or more.
Right.
They plan on putting many more out, and those are going to come over time. So think of this kind of like HBO or something like that. But this service is a paid subscription service where you're getting nothing but their originals, no catalog titles. They haven't licensed content from anyone else. And all of that is going to cost you money. Now, it's not as much money as these other services.
Right.
But you still have to pay for that. And I have a hard time understanding how people are going to justify paying whatever it costs for three or four shows or half a dozen shows or whatever.
Right. You know, when they announced this, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, it's Apple's version of Netflix. It's clearly not Netflix. And I at first started thinking, oh, it's more like a cable channel, like maybe an FX or maybe even like a premium channel like HBO. But I don't even think that's a fair comparison, because if I turn on FX at 8:30 on a random night, they're streaming some movie, not streaming, watching. Like they're showing some other show because they've got access to a bunch of other things. Same as HBO. They've got lots of other movies from other studios that have made things. There's really not anything like this.
Right. And they have a back catalog.
Exactly.
And if you are paying for HBO, whether it be solely on demand or for their cable station, as part of that service, you get their back catalog.
Right. Which is huge. It's a huge back catalog.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, what would you pay for this? Well, Apple is going to charge $4.99 a month for the entire family. So unlike some services they have, like music, where you pay a certain fee for yourself and then an additional fee if it's for the entire family, it's just $4.99 a month, $5 a month for the whole family. And like I said, this is going to be available in November. I'm still not interested. This is just, you know, I mean, I'm like you said, Apple fanboy, not interested. These shows look good, not that good. Here's the kicker. This is what might save them if the shows are good enough. If you buy an Apple device like an iPad, an iPhone, a Mac, or an Apple TV, you will get 1 year service for free.
Which gives them the time to build up their library.
It gives them the time to build up their library, and it gets you hooked on whatever the show is that pulls you in enough that you're like, oh, okay, I'll pay $5 a month for that.
Right, right. Yeah. So you're not signing up for it, which is kind of shocking. And no. I'm definitely not signing up for it.
Yeah, I'm not. Now, I don't know the details about when, if you buy a new device, you're going to get the service. For example, they announced new iPhones today, and I will be getting a new iPhone because I'm on the month-to-month plan. So when I get my new iPhone, which is likely to be before November 1st, will I qualify for a free annual subscription?
There are some weird details there. It's no. I don't remember all of the details.
Great.
If you get your iPhone before November, you'll get some, like, I think you get 2 or 3 months or something like that. So if you can hold off on upgrading your iPhone until November, then you get the year. But if you do it early, then you don't get a full year.
I mean, I don't know. I like me some Steve Carell, but I don't know if I like me that much Steve Carell. You know, like, that's just crazy.
What about Jennifer Aniston?
Yeah, she's okay. I don't know.
At least that's a daily show to watch.
Is it?
I think so.
I don't think it is. I think it's a weekly show.
Is it a weekly? It's called The Morning Show. That sounds daily
to me. Oh, see, you don't. Okay, here's the thing. The Morning Show, for all intents and purposes, is Aaron Sorkin's The Newsroom. It is a behind-the-scenes dramatization of a show.
Oh, see, that's actually more interesting.
It is.
I thought this was going to be like Live with Regis and Kelly or whoever's on that show.
No.
But with Jennifer Aniston. Okay.
No, this looks good. I don't know that it looks $5 a month good.
Right.
You know. All right. So that's it for Apple TV Plus. And that, my friends, I am very sad to say, I believe that combined with Apple TV Channels, which already landed with a thud, is Apple's big TV play.
Right.
End of story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, people got so excited when, essentially on his deathbed, in that book that was written right before he died, he's like, I've figured out TV. Sorry.
Yeah.
This is not figuring out TV.
Well, but I pretty much guarantee you this was not it.
Probably not.
I do not believe for a second that this was it. They have the largest catalog of purchase on demand content that you can acquire to watch on your television. And if they somehow could have worked with licensees to make that content available on more of an all-you-can-eat or point-based system, that would have been a game changer.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was not going to happen the way these content providers work.
Nope.
All right. So that's it for video. So let's move on to music. This was not something that they announced in this week's event, but it did come out earlier, I think actually almost a week ago now. I think this came out at the end of last week after we recorded. So basically, Apple Music is now available on the web. And this is, I think, a big deal. It was a big deal when they made podcasts available on the web. I think this is a big move for them because this pretty much puts Apple Music as a subscription service available everywhere. And that's a good thing for them.
Mostly everywhere. Yeah.
Well, now when you say mostly everywhere, what are you thinking? I mean, it's not going to be available, for example, on your Android Wear device. But what else are we missing?
Well, so there still isn't a standalone Android app for this, right? So this
no,
is
there
the
is
way.
An, there is an, no. There is absolutely an Android Apple Music app. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, then, yeah, it is basically everywhere. I didn't think there was. Obviously, I don't spend a lot of time looking into Apple Music. It's not the service I'm going to use. But but it does bring it basically everywhere else, because now it'll work in your web browser on a Windows PC. It'll work on an Android, but apparently you didn't need it because you already had the app. It'll work on a Chromebook. It'll even work on Linux. Like, if you're some hardcore Linux developer or something, you can even sign up for Apple Music now and listen in your browser on Linux.
Yeah, and in theory, it should even work on a browser on a 10-foot TV experience.
Yep. Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, I think this is good. Now, something that I think people should be aware of is that this is really just your Apple Music experience. So this is the subscription music that gives you access to all of the music that you have that you have available to you if you subscribe. It also gives you access to all of the music in your iTunes, I forget what they call it, iTunes Cloud music. So if you have basically synchronized songs that you own that might not be available in their catalog, they'll still be available for you to listen to here. It doesn't include things like Beats One and some of the other live streams that they have.
Right, right. And it doesn't have their smart playlist stuff yet, but I have to assume those things are coming.
Yeah, I would too. I mean, I think this is probably a first step. They probably want to see how this works. This is very Microsoft of them.
Yeah, this is not an Apple move. This is kind of weird. But I actually think it's a really smart move. It feels like everything now is in the browser. Everything. Like, and that's why Chromebooks are actually starting to make more sense now. You can do practically everything in a web browser now. And in most cases, it's not even a crappy experience anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe not most cases.
Depending on your
browser. A lot of cases.
Don't use IE11. Don't let your friends use IE11.
No, use Chrome, use the Edge that's based on Chromium, use Firefox, that sort of thing, and you're good. But
Safari.
Safari is kind of turning into the IE of the browser world.
Oh man, you and I have completely different. Okay, anyway,
go look at the standards, man.
All right. Anything else in the music?
Nope, that's it.
All right, let's move on to Apple Arcade. I am not a games person. I think that's pretty clear by now.
You do play mobile games, though.
I do play mobile games occasionally, and I think that Apple Arcade, the games offering from Apple, is pretty interesting. So, again, this was announced in the Summer Developer Conference, and I think at the time people were referring to this or thinking of this as Netflix for games. I think this is a much better comparison to Netflix because it is all about specifically licensed content and all third-party stuff. This is not their own stuff, so maybe that's not a good analogy. But anyway, a lot of indie developers, they're really trying to promote independent developers and get smaller houses, better recognition, better licensing. And they are looking to have about 100 games in the first few months. The thing that I mentioned before, which I think is really cool about this, is that these games are downloadable so that they can be played in single-player mode offline.
Mm-hmm.
And not all devices think about that. Certainly not all games think about that. And I think that's a very clever way of handling it because of how people use their mobile devices, whether they do or don't have a connection. Now, one of the things that I think is also really cool about this is that you can use this across devices. It's iPhone, iPad, Mac, Apple TV, and you're going to be able to not just use your Apple TV with a game controller, but you're also going to be able to pair your phones and iPads with Xbox and PS4 controllers. Now, and we talked about that before, but again, I think that's a really big deal because I think that makes these, even though they're designed to work for touch, more compelling to people who are more interested in, I don't even know what to call them, real games, power games, more like console games.
Yeah, a lot of times people call those like core games or core gamers that play console type games.
Okay.
I don't know.
That's fine. I mean, I definitely see that there's a difference there. So I think that's really cool. This is going to launch on September 19th. So pretty close, kind of around the corner. And they're going to launch it in 150 countries at launch. So they're making a big splash. This is not a soft rollout by any means.
No. Of these things that we've talked about from Apple, I think this is their biggest win here. Like, everything about this is is done right. The rollout is crazy to hit 150 countries at launch, but that's the way Apple does things. And that's one of the things they do really well. I think the price is really good. I love the offline support, like you said. I also really love that it can be shared with your family.
Right. So we didn't even talk about the price. The price is $4.99 a month, just like the Apple TV service. But in this case, you're getting a hundred, not three shows, not six shows, 100 games. And again, that's for your entire family.
Right. Like, this is a really big deal. Google is talking about releasing a very similar thing. It'll be games and apps. I don't know all of the details yet. I don't know that they finalized all of the details. But if it also supports family stuff, I'm going to do it, because what I've discovered is my daughter, I've trained her, you know, don't watch YouTube when you're not on Wi-Fi. Don't stream a bunch of music when you're not on Wi-Fi. But if you want to play games while we're taking a long drive to grandma's or something like that, go for it. It's fine. But you know what? All of these games have tons of ads, and most of the ads nowadays are video. So she's cranking through her data allowance because of stupid video ads in her games.
That's annoying. That's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really annoying. So I think this is great. If we were on iPhones and stuff, then I would definitely be signing up for this. And it makes me very, very interested in what Google's going to be doing.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. So I am excited about this. This is probably not something I'm going to get, but it's an interesting play for them. And it plays to their recognition, like many companies, that their continued success needs to depend not just on one-off product sales, but on services that they can charge a recurring fee for.
Yeah, I think the other really big thing about this is the fact that no one will pay for a mobile game has changed the way mobile games are designed. Like, everything's free to play with lots of like paid add-ons and pay to remove the ads and pay, you know, pay for this and pay for that, little things.
Yep.
That in a lot of games, it's done really poorly. So like, the game is completely unenjoyable if you're not paying for things, or it's like, you're going to, you know, build a city or whatever, but you have to wait 25 minutes for this building to complete before you can do the next thing, or pay a couple of bucks and it'll be finished now so that you can keep playing. Like, these are stupid, stupid things that are built into games. And it's all because people won't pay for them. So all mobile games tend to like funnel down into just a few core categories of types of games, because they can only make them work monetarily in these types of categories. If this type of subscription service catches on, then we might finally actually start to see game developers start to get a lot more creative with what they can do in mobile gaming, because now cost isn't an issue.
Right, right.
So not having to design your game around the monetization strategy. You
know? Assuming that Apple has reasonable licensing deals with these studios, right? That they're not screwing them over.
Right.
And putting them, you know, giving them the thumbscrew or whatever that term is, and forcing them to sell their rights for something less than what it's worth. I hope that's not what's happening here.
Yeah.
But I'm sure we'll find out more in the coming months and years. Hey, before we leave the Apple stuff and before I leave you, I wanted to just mention one more thing that wasn't really neatly in any of these categories, because this is something that is device specific. Today, but this week, Apple also announced new iPads and iPhone devices. No surprise. No surprise at all. What was a little bit of a surprise to me, anyway, is that all of those devices are going to support Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos. I'm still trying to wrap my head around that a little bit.
Yeah, I didn't see that. You know, my Samsung Galaxy Tab S3, I think that's the name of it. Samsung is terrible with naming. My Samsung tablet. So this is Samsung's competitor to the iPad, but this is from a year and a half ago's model, I think. That has Dolby Atmos sound also. I think it's pretty much just the headphone profile. That screen might be HDR, but I'm not sure about that aspect. So this isn't brand new technology for tablets and stuff, but it is really good to see it coming on the most popular tablets.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I thought that was a really cool thing. So I'm going to be, like I said, probably getting the new iPhone. So this is something I'm going to want to test out and see what it's all about. Pretty cool stuff. So that's pretty much it for the Apple news. I know there's more to talk about this week, but I am going to bail because it may be dark out, but there's a pool outside that I think is just calling for me before it gets too cool tonight.
Is that what that noise was that I kept hearing in the background? It's the pool?
That might have been it. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Well, thank you for carving out a little bit of time in your vacation to nerd out on me, even if it had to be about some Apple stuff.
Oh, if I have to.
Right. Right. I know this is so hard for you. Right. All right. Well, thank you for showing up for this, Richard. We'll let you go and we'll continue on with the rest of the show.
Very cool. Talk to you later.
Okay. So on to the normal video news. And it's not going to be all that surprising that once again, we've got some Plex news, although not as much news as more clarification. Last week, when we talked about the new partnership with Warner Brothers, I wouldn't have called it this, but Richard said that I was maybe coming up with conspiracy theories. I was just curious what this partnership meant for data sharing of what's in your library and Warner Brothers, because Plex told us there's a huge data sharing partnership between them. So we did some digging. Richard found some stuff in the privacy policy. I'm going to share that with you. And then also we asked Plex directly, what is it you're sharing exactly? So first, from the privacy policy, in case you haven't read this, because most people haven't, this just applies in general to the stuff that you have in your Plex library. It says client playback data does not identify what content was played, does not identify what server the content was played from, does not identify the owner of the server that the content was played from, and is generalized. Similarly, the server playback does not identify what content was played, does not identify which client accessed the content, and does not identify the user who played it, and is generalized. So Plex, they are doing data collection to help them, you know, make their app better. But in that collection, they're generalizing it so that that just means that they're kind of anonymizing the data. They're, like it says, it doesn't say who the user is, the name of the server. It doesn't say the name of the video being watched. It doesn't say any of that. It's just a user was streaming video for, you know, an hour and a half. I wouldn't be surprised if it says bit rates and formats and stuff like that, but it doesn't say Josh was watching The Fast and the Furious for the 37th time this week. You know, it's not like that. So I think you're good on the privacy front from that aspect. Now, what about what it is that they're sharing with Warner Brothers? Basically what they said, details about your personal libraries are not shared with Warner Brothers. Neither are their viewing habits. The only data Warner Brothers will receive from Plex is related to Warner Brothers' specific library of content. What I think that means is if you watch a Batman movie, they're going to know. Like, Plex is going to tell Warner, yeah, this person, they watched a Batman movie. That I think is fine. Like, that we expect. You know, when you sign up for Netflix and you watch Stranger Things, Netflix knows that you watched Stranger Things. That's pretty standard. So I wasn't trying to start a conspiracy theory. I was just curious and wanted to make sure that we got that information for you guys. I think we can all rest assured here that your Plex media library is safe and secure. You don't have to worry about that data being shared with anybody. One other quick video story. This is from Cord Cutters. It's kind of interesting in terms of timing and what it is. MLB TV, this is the Major League Baseball streaming service that allows you to watch basically all out-of-market MLB games. They're doing a deal right now where if you're a college student, you can get MLB TV for free. There's two giant caveats here. The first one is generally these special deals for college students things. It's like you put in your email address and as long as it's .edu, you're good to go. Oh no, that is not the case here. They want to be sure that you are a student right now. So you have to upload a photo of your student ID or give them the name of your school, the year you're going to graduate, the last four digits of your SSN, your social security number, to prove that you're currently enrolled. They're not going to give this out to just anybody. You really have to be a currently enrolled student to get this for free. Now, if you're willing to do all of that, cool. What does it get you? Well, it gets you access to all of these out-of-market games for less than a month, as far as I can tell, because while I'm not a huge baseball fan and I have absolutely zero interest in signing up for MLB TV, if this works the same way that the NHL streaming service, the one for hockey, then you only get access to this stuff during the regular season. And I think most people are probably aware that baseball is a summer sport. I mean, it's kind of a three-season sport. It starts in like April, but the regular season ends September 29th. So if you're not getting playoffs, which I bet you're not, because most of these services don't give you access to nationally televised games, you're getting this for less than a month. So do you want to go through all the hassle to get 3 weeks worth of free MLB TV? I don't know. If this works again in the spring, then cool. Sign up for this. That makes total sense. But to go through this for 3 weeks of content, I'm not sure that it's even worth it. So hopefully this is a thing that's going to be around for a while and you will be able to sign up for this in the spring. But that we don't know right now. A quick hit on an audio story that we mentioned a few weeks ago, that Spotify had started rolling out some features essentially in test to some of their European customers, features for their Spotify family plan. And these are kind of cool. I was excited about them, but was a little disappointed that I couldn't get them being here in the United States. They're now rolling them out, I think everywhere, but at least the US. And those main features are some shared playlist functionality, which I'll get into in a second, but maybe more importantly, finally parental controls. As the account holder, you'll be able to go in and on individual like sub accounts, like if you've got an account for each of your children, you can say, don't play explicit content. Now, those songs will still show up in Spotify, but they'll be grayed out and they will not play on your children's account. You could even do this on your own account, I guess, if you don't want to listen to explicit songs. The other thing that's cool is some of the shared playlist stuff. Now, don't worry, this doesn't mean that all of your children's or your partner's music is all going to start showing up in your Spotify and start wrecking all of your automatically generated playlist. That's not what's going on here. Instead, it's going to give you essentially a family playlist, which is going to mix music from everybody in your family. So if you're wanting to listen to music around the whole house in the morning while you're all getting ready for school and work, and you want everybody to get a little bit of the music they like, this works. Maybe you're on a road trip. This works for that too. So I really like this idea. It's interesting. The same day this was announced, my oldest daughter, who we have to drive to school, said, "Mom, I really think we should make a playlist that has music you like and music that I like." Well, Spotify's doing it for us. So I'm really excited to dig in and play with this functionality and see just what these playlists are going to end up looking like. On to a little bit of gaming news. The same day that that Apple event happened, EA, Electronic Arts, kind of surprise announced a closed beta for a new cloud game streaming service that they're calling Project Atlas. Now, it's a closed beta, so you have to sign up and hope that they pick you, but it sounds pretty good. I mean, but it also sounds really familiar. It's basically jump on a computer and with a web browser or with an app that you'll have to download, it'll connect to some gaming box in the cloud and stream that game down to you. So you don't need a super beefy computer. You can do this on just about anything. During the trial, your game selection is pretty limited, but while it's only four games, it's some pretty good ones. FIFA 19, so basically I think this is the top selling sports game in the world because it's soccer or football, as they call it in every other country. Need for Speed Rivals, which is a pretty fun, but it's not exactly the greatest racing game out there, but it's a fun arcade racing game. Titanfall 2, so you've got a really fast-paced first-person shoot, you know, competitive first-person shooter in there to really test the lag and the latency. And then a more casual, more fun family game, Unravel. So a really nice selection of different types of games so that if you're not a soccer player or you're not into first-person shooters, you might still have something here to check out. Now, what you might be wondering, because we've talked a lot about these types of services, is where's the tech coming from? Like, they're sure, they're, when it comes to games, they're top notch. They're one of the premier game publishers in the world. No problems there, but you've got to have the tech to support this to make it a really good experience. Well, they didn't exactly roll out their own. They did do some of it on their own, of course, but they're building it on Amazon's AWS cloud infrastructure. So they're doing it on a really solid, really well-built cloud infrastructure that's basically got servers everywhere. They may not actually have as many data centers as Azure for Microsoft, but there's boatloads of them all over the place, especially near the higher densely populated areas of the world. So definitely worth checking out. Not a ton of details yet, even a ton of details about what types of devices they'll support. But generally speaking, they're saying eventually they want to support streaming on TVs, on streaming boxes, PCs, tablets, phones, basically everything that everybody else who's setting up a service like this plans to support. So we knew this was coming, right? All of the big publishers are going to start doing this. Ubisoft already started Uplay Plus. Now EA is working on Project Atlas. Of course, Google Stadia is launching later this year, and Microsoft is working on Project xCloud, which should also be publicly testable later this year with an anticipated public release sometime in 2020. So if you're into game streaming, you're going to have a lot of options in the coming months. If streaming's not super interesting to you because you need to have the highest fidelity experience when you're playing, then I think LG's got some really good news for you. We've talked a lot on the show about LG's OLED TVs and how beautiful they are. There's really nothing better available right now when it comes to picture quality on TVs than LG's OLEDs. Well, they're now also becoming fantastic gaming displays because LG is releasing a firmware update for some of their 2019 LED models. It's the E9 and the C9 series to make them have some really important gaming features. What are they? It's mostly G-Sync. Yeah. The technology that's built into a lot of gaming monitors that allows the refresh rate of the display to match up exactly to the frame rate that the game is running at. Why this is so important is whenever the frame rate for the game goes below or above the refresh rate of your display, you start seeing tearing in the game. And it's ugly. It's not fun to deal with that. So it's a big deal on a gaming display. Consoles kind of get around this by just locking the frame rate. So that's why if you're just a console gamer, you're like, yeah, what's the big deal here? I don't see much tearing in my console gaming. PC gamers do. That's why things like NVIDIA's G-Sync and AMD's FreeSync were created, was to get rid of this tearing and make it a far smoother experience. So G-Sync capabilities on your LG OLED, that's pretty sweet. It's also getting an update. These TVs have HDMI 2.1. So in addition to this low latency G-Sync capability, it's also going to enable auto low latency mode. And what that means is you're not going to have to like grab your remote and fiddle with a bunch of settings and all that stuff. This can just automatically switch into auto low latency mode, which is essentially turn on the G-Sync, please. It should be noted that typically with most of these displays, when you turn on one of these low latency modes, picture quality does degrade some. It's different on every display, but you kind of have to choose between, do I want the absolute best frame rate or do I want it to look as amazingly gorgeous as possible? It's up to you. So there you go. LG 2019 OLEDs getting G-Sync capability. That's going to do it for our news. Richard didn't want to hang around, and I understand why, to talk about what's going on in his entertainment center, but I'm going to still tell you what I've been doing. No new hardware or anything like that. Last week, we said, you know, I think I want to make it my goal to get through Homeland by the end of the month. So how many episodes of Homeland do you all think I watched in the last week? If you guessed zero, you would be correct, because you know what I realized two nights after we recorded the show? That NHL 20 was available through early access if you were an EA Access subscriber. So guess what I spent my free time this weekend doing? Yep, playing NHL 20. You don't need a big full review of NHL 20 from me. I was going to play it either way, right? It's hockey. I'm going to play it. I'm disappointed that they haven't really changed much, and most of the changes they've made weren't really for the better. So that stinks. Some of the actual gameplay stuff is better, but the menu system is still awful. The loot box system is even worse than it was last year, but the hockey's still good. So I'm obviously going to play a ton of that and continue to play on my Xbox One. And if you want to play some Chell, as they call it, which drives me nuts, hit me up on Xbox Live. My gamer tag is RallyDSM, RallyDSM. And hopefully we can play together. I did play another game, though, mostly while I was waiting for NHL to download. This is a game called Dead Cells. It's available through Xbox Game Pass, every version of Xbox Game Pass. It's a console game and it's a PC game. It's a really small download, which is why it worked. It's only like a 500 meg download. This is a, you might call it a Metroidvania type game. It's a 2D side scrolling action game, but it's also a little bit Dark Souls and it's a roguelite. So it has permadeath. You're playing through it. You get one life. If you die, you start over. There's no checkpoints. You start over, and the levels are kind of randomized, I guess. When you die, the castle that you're in, you end up with a different castle. I don't know how that works. I played it for, I don't know, an hour or so, maybe an hour and a half. I died once and then started playing a lot more carefully. I'm really enjoying this game. Now, I don't know how happy I'm going to be if I get another hour or two in and then die, but if you're into rogue, this is a roguelite, not a roguelike, I guess. I haven't played enough of those type of games to really understand the full difference between a roguelite and a roguelike, but this is a roguelite, I guess. But some of the combat is a little bit more compared by the game developer themselves to a Dark Souls style of combat. So it's very pattern-based and things like that is, I guess, what that's supposed to mean. Frankly, whenever I heard somebody compare a game to Dark Souls, I just assumed that that meant it's maddeningly difficult, you know, frustrating, punishing, and doesn't sound fun at all. But that's not been my experience with Dead Cells. So if you've got Xbox Game Pass on PC or on console, grab it. It's a lot of fun. All right, well, that is going to do it for this episode. If you want to get a hold of us, we're all over the place. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, all that stuff. And all of those details are in the show notes over at thedigitalmediazone.com. But I always like to point out the Twitter handles. So Richard is at Richard Gunther, I am at Josh Pollard, and the website is at DigiMediaZone. Everything else, just go to the show notes for it. We've also got another podcast. It's Richard's show. It's called Home On. It's about it covers smart home technology for the DIY enthusiast. If you're looking for, you know, industrial IoT, that's not this show. If you want a smart thermostat and some smart bulbs and a hub to control all of that, that's what Home On is all about, making sense of that whole ecosystem for you. And there should be a new episode right now that just released this week for you to check out. And this week is Cedia. So that is a really, really, really huge trade show. It's basically like if CES was just smart home stuff, and it was more focused on the custom installer market, not so much the DIY. That's what Cedia is. So Cedia Expo going on this week. So there's going to be a lot of smart home news coming out over the next few days. And will, of course, make for the next episode of Home On being packed with Cedia information. The other thing I like to point out, we normally record this show live Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. And when I say live, I mean there's a live video and a chat room for you to join in with us. It's a lot of fun. We couldn't make it work this week with Richard being on vacation and stuff, but we should be back next week. Follow us on Twitter to know for sure when that show is going to be live, because we'd like to talk with you. That's going to do it for episode 497. I was joined earlier by Richard Gunther. I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.